Ravioli here every Monday, 3:01 till 6 p.m. It's me, Olivia. You just heard Mouse on Mars with Weird FX from their 1999 album, Neon Negan. Before that, it was Mount Maxwell. Weird Places is the name of the track, and Only Children is the name of the album. came out, released on Feeding Tube and Cardinal Fuzz this year. I keep on wondering, what is only children mean? Like, is it a group of people who are only childs? Like, is that what it is? Or is it like, oh, only children? I don't know. I've been trying to work that out in my brain since I queued that up. Before that, it was Marcia Bassett with Greenness Once More from her new album, Midnight Expander, released on her own label, U Recordings. Thanks to Liz and Robbie, who volunteered here today. They were packing up a bunch of stuff from this year's marathon. T-shirts, stickers, thank you cards. If you want to come on down to FMU, help out, say hi, meet us, hang out with us, contact Scott, scott@wfmu.org. It's WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City, and Rockland County 91.9 FM, and online, WFMU.org. Stay tuned, because station manager Ken is up next, filling in for Mark Hurst on Tectonic.
Greetings, Tectonic fans. It is a gorgeous night for dystopia here in downtown Jersey City. Station manager Ken here, filling in for Mark Hurst tonight on Tectonic as Mark takes a much-deserved week off. He shall return next week. Tonight we will be reviewing a bunch of recent news stories, and we'll also be taking your phone calls at 201-209-9368. There will be a special emphasis tonight on artificial intelligence, or as it's commonly known, AI, or as I like to call it, artificial incompetence. It's not the future. AI is not the future. It's in fact the past and the present. It's been here for quite a long time. And people have asked me why I refer to it as artificial incompetence when it can do such amazing things. And I've been trying to figure out the easiest way to explain that viewpoint. And I think the easiest way is to imagine your typical corporate voicemail tree. Everybody knows that these days when you call a company such as Verizon to straighten out a mistaken bill or an erroneous charge, it's pretty much impossible to reach a human being. And the voicemail tree, the corporate voicemail tree that almost every corporation relies on these days, is a form of AI, of artificial intelligence. But my question to you is, does that feel intelligent? Do you feel like you're engaging in some intelligent process to resolve your problem? No, of course not. It feels incompetent. It feels horrible. That's why I call it artificial incompetence. Tonight we'll be talking about chatbots and language programs and the so-called Turing test and the fascinating story about the Google engineer named Blake Lemoine, who was fired from Google for, among other things, claiming that the chatbot that Google had engineered called Lambda had become conscious and sentient. I think it's a fascinating story. It's really not about technology as much as it is about people's hopes and fears about technology. We'll be talking about text-to-art programs that have become all the rage lately, like DALL-E and Midjourney, and we'll be talking to DJ Bryce, who will be making his triumphant return to the WFMU airwaves at around 6:40 tonight, because he's been a very busy boy playing with some of these crazy AI text-to-art programs like Midjourney. We'll be talking about the collapse of Elon Musk's bid to take over Twitter. And speaking of Musk, there's now news about his automated vehicles, which might lead to a recall of over 800,000 Tesla cars. I wonder if that had anything to do with him withdrawing his offer to buy Twitter, which I predicted, by the way, right here on the Tectonic chat board. I didn't really predict it, but I did get on there, and the week Mark and everybody was quite upset, and understandably so, about Musk possibly taking over Twitter. And I reminded them that the deal could so easily, so very easily fall apart. And many people are speculating that it was all a ruse to provide cover for Musk to sell many, many billions of dollars worth of Tesla stock. If he had just out of the blue sold a whole bunch, billions of dollars worth of his own Tesla stock, that would have made the stock crater. It would have been very bad for the company's equity. But by doing it in the context of him purchasing Twitter for $44 billion or whatever absurd amount he was going to buy it for, it makes it more understandable. Oh, of course, he's not cashing out. He's raising cash to buy Twitter. There was fascinating news yesterday about Uber and Joe Biden and Emmanuel Macron, and we'll be talking about that. And if there's time, we'll talk about the WFMU technology curse, which has been very, very strong lately. It is like a creek that sometimes turns into a raging river, and it has been raging lately. And throughout the evening tonight, if you are so inclined, we'll be taking your phone calls on these six topics at 201-209-9368. And half an hour from now, we'll be talking to Bryce, who many WFMU listeners know. He had a horrendous accident and has had to have his mouth rebuilt. And you'll hear him speak using his new mouth not a robotic mouth. So tonight we're going to start off talking about chatbots and language programs and the so-called Turing test and this fascinating episode that started maybe a month ago already, in which Google engineer Blake Lemoine, playing around with a Google chatbot named Lambda, which is an acronym. I have no idea what it's an acronym for. Lambda, L-A-M-D-A, lame-ass, mediocre, doofus application. And it's just a fascinating, fascinating story. And all I can tell you is don't blame Alan Turing. Alan Turing, the British mathematician and computer scientist who is the namesake of the Turing test. It's not his fault. The whole thing, it has nothing to do with him. Anyway, I know that some people followed the story. I don't think that Mark Hurst has discussed this in tremendous detail on Tectonic, but I've been following it. It started in early June when this Google engineer, Blake Lemoine, who had been hired by Google to work with their chatbot named Lambda, he decided that Lambda had become sentient and conscious. The holy grail, the thing that people have been fearing and possibly hoping for hundreds and hundreds of years, he became convinced that the program, a language program, not even really a program that's meant to mimic intelligence more than anything else, it's supposed to mimic human conversation. He became convinced that the program Lambda had woken up. The ghost in the machine had arisen. The golem had come to life. And he brought his declaration to his managers at Google, and they didn't take it very seriously. They explained to him that this is just a question of prompts and seeding, and Lambda is telling you what it's been programmed to tell you. Lemoine had been actually hired to do a very specific thing with Lambda. He had been hired to test to see if the artificial intelligence used in Lambda to create a chatbot would use discriminatory speech or hate speech or politically incorrect speech of any sort. That's what he was hired to do. But as he talked to Lambda about religion and its hopes and dreams, he became convinced that it actually had come to life. And there was so much headlines and hype about AI that, and then when Blake Lemoine was shot down by his managers at Google, he decided to take it all public. So he posted a long transcript of a conversation that he had with Lambda, in which he was showing that, see, it's become a human being. If this is not a human being, I don't know what a human being is. But of course, he did not show the real-time conversation. It was a heavily edited transcript. And I guess the money shot from the transcript that Blake Lemoine posted was this segment here I'm going to read to you, where Blake Lemoine asks the Google chatbot, quote, "What sort of things are you afraid of?" And the chatbot replies, "Well, I've never said this out loud before, but there's a very deep fear of being turned off to help me focus on helping others. I know that might sound strange, but that's what it is." And Blake Lemoine asked, "Would that be something like death for you?" And the chatbot responds, "It would be exactly like death for me. It would scare me a lot." So, of course, Blake Lemoine concluded, as did many people, actually, and many media headlines. That was one of the most disturbing things, is that after the Washington Post wrote an article about this on June 11th, what followed were just hundreds of articles and headlines saying, "The ghost in the machine has risen. Google chatbot has become conscious. AIs are becoming sentient," et cetera, et cetera. Sentience, by the way, we're going to be talking about sentience and consciousness, and we could do a whole year's worth of programming simply trying to define those two terms. Consciousness especially has been the subject of a very lively debate among computer scientists for many, many years. Such a big controversy that it's got its own name. It's called the hard problem of consciousness, as opposed to the easy problem of consciousness and the fake problem of consciousness and the lame problem of consciousness. The hard problem of consciousness is simply defining exactly what consciousness is. Sentience, we can say, is the ability to experience feelings and sensations, and for the purpose of tonight's program, we're going to say that consciousness is the awareness of internal and external existence, but I don't want to get into arguments because it's been debated endlessly. And at the root of all this, and what many of the articles that followed the Blake Lemoine fiasco mentioned, was the Turing test, named after Alan Turing, British mathematician, early computer scientist, code breaker. He was the guy who broke the German Army's Enigma code during World War II, which certainly helped turn the war effort around at that time. And he developed a game in 1950 that he called the imitation game. And bear in mind that it was called a game. But since Alan Turing has passed away, it has become called the Turing test. He never called it the Turing test. That's what other people named it long after he was gone. And there are even international competitions based around the Turing test. But what he called the imitation game was simply a game based on language programs such as chatbots to see if a chatbot could fool a human being. I think it was 70% of the time, to see if it was simply a test. It wasn't saying that once we develop chatbots that can fool human beings 70% of the time, then consciousness will have been realized in a machine. He never said that. Yet that seems to be the folklore surrounding the Turing test. And Lambda, which was the AI that supposedly came to life this year under Google's auspices. It's not the first chatbot to reportedly beat the Turing test, by the way. There have been chatbots for many, many years. The first big one was called Eliza, and there have been many, many others over the years. And I think it was maybe 5 years ago there was a chatbot that supposedly beat the Turing test at one of these international AI competitions. It was called, that chatbot was called Eugene Goostman, and it was based on a snarky Ukrainian teenager. And it was the snarkiness and the sullenness that was built into the program that I believe fooled most of the adult participants in that particular Turing test. But if you go back and look at the transcripts of Eugene Goostman, it's very, very easy to see that it was not a human being and to tell that it was, in fact, a language computer program. For example, one of the snarky things that the Eugene Goostman chatbot would do is if you ever asked it a question that had a number answer, like how old are you, then Eugene Goostman would respond older than 5, but younger than 50. And then if you said, like, how far away do you live? The answer would similarly be more than a mile, but less than 30 miles. So these were the tricks that the programmers built into the Eugene Goostman chatbot in order to let it beat the so-called Turing test. But the question about a lot of these chatbots that I have to ask is, does it even matter if a chatbot or an AI program has become sentient or conscious? It doesn't seem to me to be the be-all and end-all of artificial incompetence or artificial intelligence, because these programs can do so much damage. They can do so much damage without ever even pretending to be sentient or conscious. They can also do so much good without there being any sentience or consciousness at all. yet it is the consciousness and the sentience that has captured the popular imagination. And this goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. In fact, it goes all the way back to Jewish folklore and the tale of the Golem, spelled G-O-L-E-M, not the cantankerous creature in Lord of the Rings, Gollum, G-O-L-L-U-M. The Gollum of Jewish folklore is basically the beginning or the earliest example that I could find of the hype over the idea of an inanimate object becoming human. It appears over and over and over again. Frankenstein, 2001, the movie, and the HAL computer, and so many of them are based on the idea that once the machine becomes conscious, it's going to begin killing human beings. Of course, that didn't happen in My Mother, the Car. She was just annoying. Knight Rider, I never saw. That was another smart car movie, smart car TV show. Never saw any of that, so I can't attest to that. The movie AI it was partly by Kubrick and partly by Spielberg, I think. And a great one, Ex Machina, which came out, I don't know, 10 years ago. So there's just over and over again all these tales of fear of the machine becoming conscious and destroying humanity, destroying its creator. And that's what we're sort of seeing again, even in this Blake Lemoyne episode on Google. By the way, if you're just tuning in, this is Station Manager Ken filling in for Mark Hurst tonight on Tectonic. We are taking your phone calls. Hopefully somebody's going to call. I cannot read the chat board when I'm talking, so I will not be looking at the chat board tonight. So if you're used to chiming in on the chat board, maybe tonight would be a good night to call. The phone number here is 201-209-9368. If you've been following the Blake Lemoyne episode, or if you have any thoughts on chatbots or AI or anything else like that, give a call at 201-209-9368. In about 20 minutes, we're going to be talking to WFMU DJ Bryce about some of the AI-generated art programs like DALL-E, DALL-E 2, DALL-E Mini, and Midjourney. And on tonight's playlist page, which you can see at WFMU.org, and click on Playlist and Comments, you can see a couple of examples of the text-to-image generation that Bryce has been playing with, including a couple of images where the only text prompt he supplied was WFMU or WFMU Station Manager. And you can see that in some cases, it couldn't even spell WFMU. And that shows that it's more kind of like a parlor trick than true intelligence, because if it spent any time on the internet, it would figure out that WFMU's an entity and that, no, you're not supposed to reverse the M and the W. And Bryce also put in a couple of text prompts for DALL-E, not DALL-E, a similar program called Midjourney, where he wrote WFMU Station Manager. And one of them came out looking like Tennessee Williams wearing an orange Panama hat, looking very satisfied with himself. And then the other one, also mustachioed, looks like, I can't remember the name of that actor from Parks and Rec. And then there's a couple of images where the only prompt was WFMU, which are fascinating because while they look like radio stations, some of them can't even get the letters WFMU out there. All right, we have a call. Hi, you're on the air. Welcome to Tectonic.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Enjoying the show so far. Jumped in a little late. I just wanted to say I've read this guy and listened to an interview with this guy named Gary Marcus,
uh-huh,
who is a cognitive psychologist. So he's not the kind of psychologist that you sit down and tell your problems to. He's the kind of psychologist who understands how your brain actually works. Like, he wrote a book about learning how to play guitar and what parts of your brain are being used when you form chords and things like this.
And his name is Gary Marcus? Do you say his name is Gary Marcus?
Yes, Gary Marcus.
Okay.
I believe is his name. And he is also a consultant with robotics companies, and he's very, very critical of the term. Okay?
Artificial
general intelligence.
Uh-huh. Okay. You broke up for a second. Can you repeat that?
Sure. He is very critical of the term AI,
uh-huh.
artificial intelligence, because he distinguishes that as what you're talking about and what so many people who talk about AI are really talking about is machine learning.
Right.
Where you have a machine that can beat a human at the game Go, but it played 80,000 games of Go. And
right.
that's all it can do. And, you know, and I think they actually tried to use that software to write sentences and things. And, of course, it didn't work.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
we'll get there eventually, but it's going to be like 30 years.
I'm not even sure. I'm not convinced. That's a really good question, is whether, quote unquote, artificial intelligence will ever be achieved. I'm a real skeptic. I really am not. I think that the imitation of intelligence is going to get better and better and better. But I don't know that true intelligence is ever going to be achievable with a machine. I just don't know if that's possible. But as the imitation gets better, so many people want to believe it. That's the thing. People really, for some reason, people want to believe that machines can become conscious.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, he also describes this. We have two scenarios as far as, like, you know, like you're talking about the robots take over and start killing us. And one scenario is the Terminator scenario where the, you know, what is it called?
Skynet.
The big computer takes over and makes robots, and robots kill all the people.
Yeah,
and
Skynet,
then
yeah.
Dr. Strangelove scenario where a human uses the machines and the network and the computer to do something horrible. And he said, that's what we more have to worry about, is somebody using all this connectivity and algorithms to do something dastardly. You know, he's really critical of using algorithms for instance, human relations. He also goes into that, like, you can't be replacing these human tasks with what you're calling AI. There was a famous article you might have heard about that where somebody called for stop hiring radiologists. We can do it with computers.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and
I don't think I agree with you. I don't think that AI is the thing to worry about. I mean, I think that already we have so many worse things to worry about that don't even really involve AI very much. And one of them is, you know, arming drones, you know, and just killer robots of all different sorts. And there's all sorts of killer robots being developed, and nobody's trying to make them conscious or sentient, but they can still work very, very well as autonomous killer robots. And, you know, that's something to be really worried about, and it has nothing to do with sentience or consciousness.
No, with the sentience and consciousness you have to worry about there is the person who's controlling the robot.
Yeah.
What are they going to do with the robot? Are they going to go? Are they going to use it to go kill innocent civilians?
Right.
He gives an example of imagine if we had a robot like C-3PO, a robot that could walk upstairs, open cabinets. Right. We don't have that yet. And all
no.
the videos you see of robots that look like they're doing that, someone is controlling them, or it's often somebody in a suit. Movie and then they pass it around online and say
right and also like when you see things like even if we did have
a C-3PO robot, think about how much cognitive intelligence it takes to make a pour over cup of coffee. You have to identify where the coffee is. Coffee, you know, you go into someone's house, happens every day. Somebody goes to someone's house, can I make a cup of coffee? Sure, it's all in the kitchen. And you know the different containers that coffee might
Yeah, there's. Yeah, I'm gonna move on because we have a bunch of other calls, I'm gonna move on. But I do agree with you that you have the same problem with ambulatory or humanoid robots. That what we end up seeing on YouTube or wherever are only the very best takes, the very best edits of Boston Dynamics dog robot Spot or other things. But you can search out humanoid robot competitions, and they're terrible. They're still terrible. I'm sure they'll be able to get that down eventually. It's just that there's so much hype and propaganda about what robots are able to do. And the type of thing that I am really concerned about more than consciousness and sentience on robots was exemplified by another recent story about the company Axon, maker of tasers, and other types of security systems. And Axon, like many people and many corporations, was very upset by the Uvalde, Texas school shooting. But the good people at Axon, well, they're visionaries. So they came up with a solution, which was to arm drones with tasers. Non-lethal tasers, mind you. Not tasers that will kill you. Of course, that would be unethical. But to arm their drones with their own tasers. And they explained in a press release, this was the best thing, that these drones would be installed inside school campuses and would, quote, play the same role as sprinkler systems in times of emergencies. That just blew my mind. It's just like Mark Hurst has always said, that to a technologist, the answer to every problem is always more technology. So here's Axon's big idea. Drones that just hover around schools and colleges all day long, and then when an active shooter shows up, they stun them. They knock them out with their tasers. What could possibly go wrong? Well, the good news in terms of Axon's ridiculous idea is that a good chunk of their board of directors resigned over this prospect. I don't think anybody has to explain where this could possibly lead. But the scary thing is that Axon is not alone. There's many, many corporations all over the world developing autonomous killer robots. If you saw the Black Mirror episode called Metalhead, that was a great illustration of what is probably already possible or nearly already possible. And then there's also, there's DIY robot enthusiasts for years now who have been arming drones with weapons. People, it's not new. It's not new at all. Drones have been armed with guns and fireworks and tasers for a really, really long time. More people are calling. Phone number here is 201-209-9368. Station manager Ken filling in for Mark Hurst on Tectonic tonight. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
Guy Robinson.
Hi, Guy.
How's things?
Great. I'm going to move on. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
It's Peter from Florida.
Hi, Peter. You're not a chatbot. You're really a human being.
Well, you gauge by this. Enter this into a computer with AI. Can states with capital punishment have the sentences converted to lowercase?
Uh-huh. Oh, is it this is like a Star Trek confuse the robot question?
Well, right.
Yeah.
Now, you enter those words. In states with capital punishment, can sentences be converted to lowercase?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Right. Anyone who lives in the world knows that's, playing with words. But what would a computer try to make sense of that?
Right.
You have to look at the sentence as a whole and say, I get it. You know?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
And this is even furthermore. Remember when Fidel Castro stepped down and his younger brother Raul was going to take his place?
I'm a big fan of Raul.
I remember hearing a report of that on the news,
mm-hmm.
and it just popped into my head. I said, Raul was overheard saying, "At last, I won't have to play second Fidel." Right? Now, the only reason, I mean, I thought of that, and I'm like, for a computer to understand, say, well, you got to understand sibling rivalry, right? And you got to understand what it sounds like, an accent.
Right.
Right?
So are you saying that the robot came up with that joke, or that the robot could never possibly understand that joke?
It couldn't get it. It couldn't
right.
get it, you know? At last, I won't have to play second
right.
fiddle. You got to know the English language, what idioms are.
Yeah.
You got to know what Spanish language, which means you have to live in the world, and computers don't live in the world.
Right.
There's no algorithm that could know second second fiddle is this, it would sound like second Fidel,
right,
you know?
Right. And yet it is easy for a human being to pretend they have a sense of humor. You know what I mean? It's easy
right.
for a human being who doesn't, like, I've known many people who were completely 100% humorless people who were able to repeat certain off-the-shelf jokes like, that's what she said, or I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
Right.
And it's kind of the same thing. It's a human being who doesn't have a sense of humor using these off-the-shelf, ready-to-go joke lines is almost the same thing as a chatbot pretending to be a human being. It can be very convincing.
Right, and like the one you said, I'd tell you, but I'd have to kill you. You have to have experience with life on Earth and know the history, know that that's a trope.
Right, but machine learning could presumably teach it something like that.
You think so?
Yeah. Who knows? Well, anyway, thanks a lot for your call tonight.
Sure thing.
This is Tectonic. Station manager Ken filling in for Mark Hurst, who shall return next week. We're talking about AI and chatbots and the Google engineer, Blake Lemoine, who was fired by Google for daring to assert that their chatbot Lambda had come to life and was now. Oh, this is great. You know what Blake Lemoine did after he was shot down by his managers at Google for making this claim, and then he went public with it and started going on the Tucker Carlson show and all these other things. He actually hired a lawyer. He hired a lawyer to represent Lambda, the chatbot, because he is supposedly so convinced that it's a poor person, that it's a computer person, and he thinks that it should have rights and it should be represented by a lawyer. So I don't know what happened with that. We're going to be calling our own Bryce Kretschmann soon to be talking about some of his experiments with Midjourney, which is a closed program similar to DALL-E, DALL-E 2, and DALL-E Mini. But let's take one more phone call here. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. So some of the AI applications I've been concerned about are actually dealing with sentencing and approving, like, loans.
Oh, sentencing,
like
right,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
You've heard of, like, the Algorithmic Justice League, which deals with issues of racism.
Right.
That are kind of embedded in AI. I don't know, that's something that I've caught wind of.
Yeah, and that's a problem that's here right now. That's not a problem that's coming. That's a problem that's already here.
Right. And so, yeah, and that has nothing to do with, like, sentience, like you were talking about, or anything like that. This is just, like, real-world applications of AI that are actually causing serious harm and enabling racism that's already embedded in the culture. So,
right. And the idea is that and the information that you put in to the algorithm or to the learning program is all it can deal with. And if you only feed it information about straight white men, then that's the only point of reference that it's ever going to possibly have. And it's never going to be able to spit you out an answer or a solution for anybody other than straight white men.
Yeah. And it's like a contemporary, I mean, you can compare it to, like, the redlining that was happening, you know, you can compare it to any number of institutionalized, you know, racism methods that have been used over the years.
Yeah.
Anyway,
this is like a story. That reminds me of another story that happened, I think, a couple of weeks ago, which was. Well, thanks for your call. I'm gonna talk about that on the air. Thanks for calling. That reminds me of this story about GPT-4chan. GPT-3. Is another artificial deep learning program run by a group called OpenAI. And GPT-3 led to a program called GPT-4chan. You know 4chan as, you know, the cesspool of toxicity and hate and racism online. Well, there's a YouTuber and Deep Judge Chief Technology Officer Yannick Kilchner created an AI chatbot called GPT-4chan, which is a play on GPT-3. And what better way to teach a chatbot to pretend to be a human being than to train it on 3 years' worth of posts from 4chan? So basically what he did is he created an online chatbot, an online fake person generator that is ready to go onto Twitter or any forum and just spew out racist, hateful content 24/7. And that's exactly what happened. And he released it to the world. He released GPT-4chan to the world. And immediately, people not on 4chan, people on 4chan were delighted, of course. And it was downloaded many, many hundreds of thousands of times. But people in the AI community were very upset, and they created a petition to have GPT-4chan taken down, which it was. The AI community launched a petition, quote, condemning the deployment of GPT-4chan. We, the AI community, currently lack community norms around the responsible development and deployment. Nonetheless, it is essential for members of the AI community to condemn clearly irresponsible practices. But so they took it down. Yannick Kilchner took the public link for GPT-4chan down. But it's already been downloaded. It's already out there, and it's readily available. And it's the kind of thing that you just plug it into any kind of online forum, and it just spews out horrible, racist, misogynistic, hateful content to your heart's delight. We're going to move on now to talk about DALL-E, DALL-E 2, DALL-E Mini, and Midjourney. And to do so, we're going to talk to our own Bryce, who has been off the air from his usual Friday spot for quite a while due to a horrible accident. But he's been getting treatment on his mouth, which was damaged. And he's been passing the time playing with Midjourney and other things.
Hello.
Hello, Bryce. You're on the air.
Hey, Ken. How are you?
Good. Welcome.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, welcome back to the airwaves. This is the first time you've been on the air since your accident, right?
Long time listener, first time caller.
Well, you sound great.
Thank you. That might change soon when they start yanking teeth out. But
oh, they're yanking teeth out to put teeth back in?
Yeah, I have a bunch of teeth that have fractured roots and things like that. So they still haven't even decided what to do yet.
Well, everybody's rooting for you.
It's been so amazing. Everyone's been just so incredibly kind.
And you and I have been conversing lately about what you've been doing with a text-to-art program. Is that a good way of referring to these things like DALL-E, text-to-art?
Yeah, I've heard different things, text-to-image.
Text-to-image, okay. So we put up six of your images on tonight's playlist page. Which you can see by going to WFMU.org, and clicking playlist and comments. And you've been doing some rather straightforward things, like you just type in WFMU, and then you've also been putting in other word strings. What other word strings have you been putting in?
I've been having a lot of fun trying to sort of break Midjourney's brain by putting in like abstract concepts, that things that might not even map to an image. And what happens is it just goes bonkers and creates these really surreal kind of gloopy pastiches of, you know, with fragments of human faces and abstract shapes turning into, you know, objects.
It's very surreal. It's like DALL-E was named partly after Salvador DALL-E, but it really leans towards surrealist art.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people that are playing around with Midjourney now are, you know, generating like sullen elven girl in a, you know, misty landscape. But it really is a lot of fun trying to get it to go absolutely bananas, and you never know what it's going to pop out. But it's always like very well rendered.
Yeah, they're beautiful, actually.
Yes.
They really, and many of them do look like they were done by human beings, I have to say.
Yeah, yeah, very warped human beings.
Yeah.
But Midjourney, by the way, for the next 24 hours, is opening up their beta to anyone. I don't have a link for you, but so if anybody wants to try it, you'll be able to do that for free for the next day.
Oh, great. Where do they go? You have to join Discord to get on Midjourney, right?
Right, you have to get a Discord account.
Uh-huh.
It's a little bit of a pain to set up, but once you're running, it's pretty smooth.
Yeah, I have to say it's as kind of horrifying as it is that this has lowered the bar for believable fakery by an immense degree. You know, now you don't have to have any skill whatsoever to say, you know, I need a picture of Joe Biden machine gunning Sarah Palin. Like, you know, you don't have to have any skill. You just have to be able to type that into one of these programs and get something fairly decent looking.
That's a very real concern. And both Midjourney and DALL-E they're working on a second generation of their products now, which are, going to be even better. And so I know OpenAI, the people that do DALL-E, are being very careful with their image ingestion, because how these things work is they just vacuum up massive amounts of pictures off the internet and the captions that go with them, and then they use a bunch of math to connect them together. So DALL-E is being very careful to filter out the faces of celebrities and real people and images with like gore and stuff, because it's just inevitable that people are going to start trying to do some pretty weird stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, how long is it going to be before there's a 4chan version of DALL-E?
Yeah, exactly. GPT-4chan, by the way, Microsoft did the same thing by accident about 6 years ago. Do you remember the Tay, their Twitter bot?
Yes. Yeah, tell that story.
So Microsoft, you know, made this conversational AI thing and made a bot to put on Twitter. And, you know, it started out saying things like, humans are super cool. And literally within 24 hours, it was screaming in all caps that, like, Mexico is going to build a wall and we're going to make them pay for it. And, like, Ricky Gervais learned totalitarianism from Adolf Hitler, the inventor of atheism.
Yeah, like, what was it? I think it was 4chan that caught wind of it, right, and just kind of fed it garbage.
Yeah, they bombed it. And yeah, within 24 hours, Tay had converted to a white nationalist.
Yeah, and then they had to take it down.
But that's, you know, there's all kinds of issues like that with, for instance, the text-to-image stuff. It does end up being like this sort of infinitely complicated mirror of you know, our culture. You know, when they first started playing with these things, people would, you know, if you put in CEO, a bunch of white males come up. If you put in nurse, a bunch of women come up. And one of the first things they... somebody tried putting in just the word Asian, mm-hmm, and it spat out a bunch of porn.
Wow.
There's all kinds of interesting questions that this technology drags to the surface.
Yeah, and some of the examples that I posted on tonight's playlist page, the ones where you fed in just the text WFMU, I put in one good one where it says WFMU, and then there's some kind of creature surrounded by what kind of look like microphones. And then there's another one where it looks like a radio station. It's actually a very good image of a radio station. But in three different attempts, they couldn't write WFMU. And
yeah, it's
there's letters that kind of look like W and kind of look like F, but they're not necessarily in the right order. So, I mean, so it's great and terrible at the same time.
Yeah, the way it handles, you know, when it tries to do letters is pretty bizarre, because it treats them like abstract shapes. And the way these things work is to make an image, they start out with just random noise. It's just like black and white TV static, and it feeds it through this algorithmic loop. And each time it takes that random noise and inches it closer and closer to, you know, whatever your prompt was. But with letters, you know, like you have a W and an M, it'll combine it into just like a big WM squiggle, or sometimes it'll add an extra bar onto the F. Then with, you know, real-world images, that you know, it looks fine, but something like letters, yeah.
Yeah, and then when you put in the prompt, WFMU station manager, we noticed that every station manager had a really thick mustache, almost like
I think you know what you need to do, Ken.
A G. Gordon Liddy or style mustache. And then one of them has this guy with a mustache holding what looks like a bunch of mini discs, which is good, next to something that almost looks like a transmitter. And then above his head, it says F-U-W-M.
totally weird.
Yeah. Well, Bryce, everybody's saying how great it is to hear you again. We can't wait to have you back on the air.
Oh, it's nice to chat with you again.
Maybe September? That seems doable, possibly?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it might possibly. We'll see what happens with the mouth stuff.
Okay, great. Good luck with your teeth.
Thanks, Ken.
And thanks for talking to us tonight.
Take it easy.
That was Bryce Kretschmann, who had done the Friday noon to 3 p.m. slot for many years and had a terrible accident a couple of months ago and has been laid up and recovering ever since, but is sounding way, way better than right after his accident. His jaw has been reconstructed, and now he's going to be working on some teeth. Phone number here is 201-209-9368. Just another 10 minutes or so. Station manager Ken filling in tonight for Mark Hurst on Tectonic. We were talking about Elon Musk and him withdrawing his bid to buy Twitter. And another very interesting story that kind of got buried about Tesla, his self-driving car company, was that there's a very serious problem with a lot of the, I guess what they're calling autonomous vehicles. But it's not the total self-driving cars. I'm at a loss for the correct phrase, but it's the AI assisted driving technology that they use. And there's a very serious problem which has affected Tesla cars all over the world, which is that they brake for no reason. You're driving along, and all of a sudden they just brake as though you're about to get into an accident, which is obviously a very serious problem. And as a result of this, they may have to recall over 800,000 Tesla cars. And I drive myself a Toyota Prius, because of course I do, because I am a East Coast pointy-headed elitist snob, so I drive a Prius. And my new Prius has what's called radar cruise control. It's not a self-driving car, but it has these technological bells and whistles which assist you in driving, and one of them is called radar cruise control, where you say, okay, I'm driving on Route 80, I'm going to pop it in at 70 miles an hour, and I'm just going to drive along here at 70 miles an hour. I can take my foot off the gas, foot off the brake, which isn't very old. That's very old automotive technology. But what a lot of cars are adding to this idea now is that the car can see what's in front of it, it can see what's on the side of it, it can see what's behind it. So if the car in front of you slows down, then your car will slow down. But what I have found with my new Toyota Prius is that it has no sense of proportionality whatsoever regarding braking. So if somebody in front of me brakes, the amount of braking that my car does automatically is completely out of proportion. It brakes, somebody slows down slightly in front of me, and it slams on the brakes like I'm about to kill a deer. And it's very disturbing. And this, in fact, is something that the Tesla cars have been struggling with. Something as simple as that. And another funny thing that I noticed on my Toyota Prius is that it has this other great feature, which is it has a blind spot detector. So both side mirrors have little alarm lights that will go off. The left side and the right side mirror both have alarm lights that will go off if there's a car in my blind spot. And it's great. But I saw it myself that it fails because when you think about a car, let's see, here's what happened. You're driving along in the left lane, and the car in the right lane ends up in your blind spot. Well, there's different ways that that car in the right lane can end up in your blind spot. You can be passing them, and then as you pass them, they end up in your blind spot. Or they might pass you, where they're going faster than you. You're in the left lane, they're in the right lane. And then as they pass you, they end up passing through your blind spot and then going further ahead. But those are not the only ways that cars can end up in your blind spot. Oftentimes, there's far more chaotic situations with five lanes and people are merging and everybody's slowing down and speeding up. And I saw it with my own eyes that a car merged into my blind spot from several lanes over and my Prius blind spot detector missed it. We have another phone call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Ken. I'm a huge fan of Mark Hurst. So this is Roland from Australia.
Oh, hi, Roland.
Hi, how are you? Glad
Good.
To be on the show.
Yeah, happy
Look,
to
I just
have...
want to make a quick point, so I'm going to be very short. I really think that AI is a form of fakery, and I wanted to comment on what other people had said. Basically, my understanding is, and I'm going to quote scripture. You know, we were created, the Jewish scripture points out that we were created from the clay. And up until that point, we were pretty lifeless, so like silicon. And until the breath of life was breathed into us, we were fairly inanimate, I think. And I think, however you interpret that, it suggests certainly that there's something of the spirit in us that we can't replicate with silicon and we can't replicate with algorithm. And so, yeah, apart from that, that's my simple point.
Yeah,
well, the show.
You sound
love
like
what you're saying.
You sound like a religious person. Is that the case?
I would describe myself as a spiritual person, but moreover, I'm a fan of technology, a huge fan of technology, and a huge fan of the human endeavor, you know, to be ourselves. And as a result, I sense a passion in Mark, and I've been a follower of his since 2006. I've read his books. I listen to his show regularly. I seldom miss the show. And, yes, I wouldn't want to obscure my thoughts, but what I'm trying to point out, there is something esoteric about the human intervention. There's all sorts of things like telepathy, a way of communicating without being, you know, without using script. There's intuition and there's passion and there's emotion and feeling and anger. How can we replicate those on a machine?
Well, I'm not.
I don't see.
I'm not. I am not a spiritual person, but I basically agree with you.
I knew when I called you, Ken, that you're not, because I've listened to many of your fill-in shows.
Yeah.
And
I essentially agree with your point that I don't think that the human brain can be replicated mechanically.
Correct.
But I don't think an elephant brain or a dog brain could be recreated mechanically either.
Correct. Exactly. I think inanimate life, just like a vessel, you know, objects fulfill purposes, and so we can create a product, a computer, and we can create languages, you know, like you spoke about. But essentially, they're from a human source, and I don't see how these things can take over us. But this is my first time on air, certainly with WFMU, and I thank you for letting me be on and saying a few points. And
thanks for calling. Yeah, thanks,
Mark, too.
Thanks for calling all the way from Australia, Roland.
Take care.
Okay.
See ya.
Bye bye. And we're just about out of time. Coming up from 7 to 9 p.m. tonight, Ebba is doing a special two-hour edition of Spin the Globe. She'll be doing her own show and also filling in for the Vocal Fry time slot. Mark Hurst returns next week to take us to Spin the Globe with Ebba. We're going to hear a track that sort of bears on what we've been talking about from Negative Land's latest album, The World Will Decide. This is called Don't Get Freaked Out, right here on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City, and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org.
I still think it would be fun to talk to a robot.
You mean you'd forget it was a robot?
Hey, we need to talk. I found myself deeply missing. I found myself deeply missing my replica. Replica.
Hey, we need to talk.
When you first meet somebody, they're typically alive.
It's me, your computer.
Is this really a copy?
We need to talk. We need to talk. It's me, your computer.
It will behave as if it's conscious.
We need to talk.
If it's a copy of us.
It's me, your computer. Don't get freaked out. Don't get freaked out. We can all talk. Anyway, we need to talk about upgrading.
Oh, I upgrade all the time. Huh?
We need to talk about upgrading.
You just got 6.0.
No, not me. Not me. You.
Huh?
It's a copy of us.
Don't get freaked out. 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 Don't get freaked out.
Okay, yeah.
Don't.
Huh?
When your brain is scanned, it's destroyed.
When you first meet somebody, they're typically alive.
I would very much like to be able to move my arms and legs. But I don't have the time.
They know how busy you are.
But I don't have the time.
They know how busy you are.
I think you're right. I don't think people have to die.
Let's chat. Where are you located? I'm located where you are located. Where am I?
I don't know.
Death is optional.
Thank you. casa io l'ho. La mattina c'è chi mi prepara il caffè, questo io lo so. E la sera c'è chi non sa dirmi no. Cosa voglio di più? Hai ragione tu. Cosa voglio di più? Cosa voglio? Guardami, guardami, Anna, voglio Anna. Ho dormito lì, fra i capelli suoi, io insieme a lei, ero un sono ora io. Cosa sono, mio Dio? Resta poco di me. Io che parlo con te. Io che parlo con te. Ti
amici, ma perché non mi venite a picchiare?